This podcast is brought to you by Harry's. For guys like you who want a great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now, go to harrys.com and get $5 off your first purchase by entering the code Science Friday when you check out.
This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatto. It's just two notes, but they're unmistakable. And they can make your skin crawl. The scariest parts of a horror film aren't always the slashers or blood-sucking vampires. Sometimes it's just the shrieking violins and the music that can be enough to get your pulse racing. And it's not just movie scores either. Certain pop songs or classical orchestrations can set you a little on edge, no matter how many times you've heard it. Why do our brains interpret certain combinations of notes as spooky? And how do songwriters and movie makers use that to make us jump out of our seats? We want to know what songs send a chill down your spine and why. Give us a call. Our number is 844-724-8255. 844-724-8255. You can also tweet us at SciFry. And for more on what we'll be talking about this hour, go to sciencefriday.com. where you'll find links to our topic, scary music. Let me introduce my guests. Jim DeRogatis is co-host of Sound Opinions and a music blogger for WBEZ in Chicago. He joins us from WBEZ Studios. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, Ira. How are you?
Nice to talk to you again. Daniel Levitin is author of the book, This Is Your Brain on Music, The Science of a Human Obsession. He's also the Dean of Arts and Humanities at the Minerva School at the Keck Graduate Institute and director of the Laboratory for Music Perception, Cognition, and Expertise at McGill University in Montreal. Welcome to Science Friday.
Oh, thanks for having me back, Ira.
If you're brave enough, we have a sci-fi playlist of spooky music on our website. It's at sciencefriday.com/spooky music. You have been warned. Jim.
You're having too much fun
I am having a great time. Well, Jim, tell us, what are the ingredients for you of a good scary song?
You know, I think, you know, in pop music, I'm a pop music critic. We have the musical element that can send chills up and down your spine. And I'm interested in hearing our scientists talk about why that is. I just know that it happens. But we also have, you know, the lyrical content. And I think that, you know, a lot of great songwriters have put themselves in the heads of some monstrous characters, mm-hmm. or have imagined themselves doing some monstrous deeds. And as great as, say, a Poe or a Clive Barker can be in literature, in terms of horror, you know, the music adds this other element. And yet it's not so much so that in the movies, I mean, what we imagine when we hear really creepy lyrics and really creepy sounds in our heads is going to be far more horrifying than what we would see on screen.
Well, I want to play for you a tune, a song that you chose that spooks the heck out of you. It's Peter Gabriel's Intruder. Well, it's playing a little. Jim, tell us, what specific parts of that do you find spooky? What makes that spooky for you?
Well, a lot of casual listeners may think of Peter Gabriel as, you know, the force behind Sledgehammer, but this was his third solo album. Gabriel was always very theatrical on stage, and he is imagining himself in the midst of a home invasion and never quite spelling out what he's going to do to the sleeping people inside. But the combination of that lyric, you know, I am the intruder, and those sounds. I mean, you just heard something that sounded like the screen door being ripped open or pried apart, right, as he enters mm-hmm. the home. And there's these weird, like, you know, creaky floor sounds that happen. And then just that primal African tribal drum beat. Creepy as hell.
Hmm. Daniel Levitin, what is Peter Gabriel doing in that song that sets up a feeling of scariness?
Well, there's so much richness here to talk about, but I'll start with the timbre. Timbre is the sound of musical instruments or voices. And we believe that this traces back to ancient evolutionary history for humans. We would alert, we evolved an alerting mechanism to sounds that might have indicated danger. One example of that is animal calls that we share across species. If you're suddenly surprised or suddenly made to fear something, you take a deep breath. That's evolutionary adaptive, because you might have to run or fight or do something. And then you let it out, and that big breath being let out through the vocal cords of humans and birds and other mammals creates a very particular sound, a kind of scratchy sound. And so we've evolved to find that alarming. It's an alarm signal. Hmm. Second part is the drums. Humans evolved an exquisite change detector in the prefrontal cortex of the brain. The purpose of this change detector, again, is to alert us if something in the environment is changing in such a way that it might pose a threat. So take the example of footsteps. Bump, 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 bump. They get louder and louder. It suggests they're approaching. And if they stop, that's the most horrifying thing of all, because it means the intruder is right there. And you have that bump, bump kind of a rhythm in the Peter Gabriel track, which gives you this, I think, connection to ancient evolutionary fear response.
Huh. When people sometimes describe something as scary, they have this unpleasing sound that they usually talk about dissonance. I want to play what we pulled out as something, probably the most famous dissonant piece of sound we could find. Of course, that is we all know that as the bathroom scene, the shower scene from Psycho. Daniel, what's happening? Why are we so frightened at that?
The great Bernard Herrmann, film composer. So, well, there's a lot of things going on there. One is there's a timbre, that screechy sound on the violin mimics a distress call in a human, right? If you're distressed, you might make an kind of a sound, and the violins are attempting to replicate that with the force that they're putting on the strings and the way that they're bowing. And then, as you said, Ira, there's the dissonance. Human music appreciation has evolved over the centuries, and we now accept as pleasing or consonant things that we didn't even a couple of hundred years ago. Mm-hmm. But in general, dissonance are chords that are unresolved. And you can accomplish that by using certain intervals, such as the tritone, or minor seconds, as we just heard in the Bernard Herrmann score. The unresolution of it tells you that something's coming, but the longer you delay that coming, the more on edge it puts you.
Hmm. Wow, that's true. Jim, is there a more dissonant sound, spooky sound in all of movies? Or
music? No, that's way up there. I think most rock musicians have been aping what Herrmann did with Hitchcock in those soundtracks for 40 years. You know, there's also something rhythmic going on there. It's impossible to listen to that little piece of music without thinking of the knife coming down again and again and again, right?
Mm-hmm.
In perfect synchrony with the music. And Jim, I very much like your point about pop music, because I think Nine Inch Nails and PJ Harvey and others have been trying to capture some of that.
Oh, absolutely. I think we all love to play with this notion of the gothic, and it's fun to be horrified. You know, it's a wonderful roller coaster ride.
Mm-hmm. And so it's a deliberate thing to be rebellious, edgy, spooky.
Yeah, but it can cross into camp, too. I mean, there's plenty of people that have tried in rock and roll and pop music to be horrifying, you know, like an Alice Cooper or a Marilyn Manson. And I mean, to me, that just goes over the edge. Some of the tracks that I picked for you guys tend to be the more subtle ones. I think it's like, you know, again, that famous Hitchcock scene in Psycho, right? It's what you don't see. You right. never see the knife hit the body, right? You know, it's what you don't see that makes it scarier, not the overkill of today's sort of, mm-hmm. you know, torture porn horror movie.
Yeah, in fact, they wanted to censor that scene until Hitchcock said, there's no blood, there's nothing there, you just put it in with your mind.
You just think you saw it, yes.
Yeah, you saw it. Well, speaking of which, a clip that we want to play for you, this is a Penderecki clip. Let's play that and we'll talk about it. Jim, how does that make you feel?
Well, that's pretty creepy, but that's got nothing on Lou Reed's Metal Machine music, let me tell you. That's what it made me think of, you know, just the layers and layers and layers of dissonance. There's certain records, Ira, that I think as a rock fan of long standing that I reserve for those occasions when the party really should have ended at about 2 a.m. and now it's 3:30 and you put these records on to clear the room because you don't want to be so rude as to throw people out. But that Penderecki would work.
But, you know, that sounded very close to the scene when in 2001 Space Odyssey when he's coming close to, you know, to Jupiter and, you know, everything gets distorted near the end of the movie.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's the same sort of, you know, fear angle there. Daniel, what are you trying to learn from your research about stuff like this?
Well, we're trying to figure out if there are pieces that are universally judged as invoking certain emotions. So we've played thousands of pieces to thousands of people now in our laboratory. And what we're after is there something universal that people across ages and cultures and musical tastes all consider, well, okay, this is a happy song, this is a sad song, this is a frightening song. And the threnody for the victims of Chernobyl that you just played by Penderecki is one that universally we find, people find, identify as frightening. And I think part of what's going on there is that the brain likes order. And whether you know it or not, there's a region of the brain, it doesn't have a very elegant name, it's called Brodmann Area 47. We've been studying this little piece of tissue for the last 15 years. It's just behind your temples on each side of the brain. And it's the prediction device in the brain trying to predict over time. When you hear something as dissonant as this, it's signaling to your brain there is no order. There is no resolution. Anything could happen. And the fact that the world might not be orderly and that anything can happen can be scary. It's frightening.
Let's go to the phones, but first I remind everybody that I'm Ira Flatow, and this is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. Little River, South Carolina. Hi, Megan. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hi.
Hi there. What scares you?
Well, La Fortuna actually really deeply terrifies me.
La Fortuna?
Yes.
And when do you just have to turn it off if you hear it, or what do you do in reaction to it?
Well, I think there's, you know, a very good reason why so many movie composers use it as the soundtrack to the Armageddon. And it really does have some order, but that order is really frightening for me.
All right.
I don't have to turn it off. I like being scared, but.
Jim, you know what she's talking about?
I do, but sometimes I think it's our own associations, right? I mean, you know, personally, I'm horrified whenever I hear Miley Cyrus. But I don't think it has anything to do, you know, scientifically or technically with the composition of the music. I think it's just my fear for the future of humanity and what she represents.
But more universally speaking, I think everyone, I played the little first notes from Jaws when we were top of the show. I think everyone, they hear those, and it's sort of a communal fear, right? Who does not get fearful when those Jaws notes come on? It's something.
Sure.
It has nothing to do, and it has nothing to do with dissonance in the music either, does it?
No, or think of the couple of notes that Mike Oldfield plays as the theme for The Exorcist, and you know that was a great album that existed as a double sided album, one long orchestral progressive rock piece, you know, and it's repositioned in the movie and takes on new meaning. But when you listen to it, even if you've never seen The Exorcist, there is something creepy about it, and yet it's not dissonant. It's just creepy.
Daniel Levitin, are minor keys often associated with sad music? Is there any evidence for that?
Well, it's interesting you phrase it that way. They're associated with sad music, but that's culturally specific. So when we hear a minor key or a minor chord here in North America and, in fact, Western Europe, we think of that as sad or melancholy or reflective, and we tend to think of major keys as happy. But that's just because composers over the last 400 years have used other devices alongside those to reinforce those associations.
Mm-hmm.
So in particular, major key music tends to be at a faster tempo. Minor key music tends to be in a slower tempo. And cross-cultural studies have shown us that this really is a kind of ethnocentrism, that you go to other countries and other cultures, and minor doesn't equal sad. Take, for example, klezmer music, which is almost exclusively in minor keys, but people who listen to it say it's not particularly sad.
Hmm. Jim, do you think your idea of a scary song has changed over time?
No, I think it's classic. What we were saying before about those rhythms, you know, those primal rhythms, or even the drone. You know, if we take the Eastern drone, which is in totally different scale to what we're used to in Western music, you know, there's something frightening about the drone, and it's probably striking some caveman chord in us that, you know, there's a mammoth outside that's going to stomp on us. I agree with this scientific notion.
Yeah, I have a tweet, an interesting tweet from Sarah Grabinski, who's listening in her car with her dog. The violins from Psycho made her dog jump to the back seat.
See, it's animalistic.
Yeah, something. Daniel, is there evidence for that?
There is. So there have been studies of this notion that music is functioning as a distress call, and it can activate the same regions of the brain, this distressing music, as a distressed voice would. My colleague Pascal Bailan, many years ago at McGill, showed that there are regions of the brain that are sensitive to music, and separate regions of the brain that are sensitive to human-made sounds, whether that's laughter or crying or speaking, coughing and sneezing. There's a kind of human sound detector. And that human sound detector can be activated by certain musical instruments playing in a certain way, such as a violin that's being especially expressive, suggesting, of course, that this part of auditory cortex is interpreting the musical instrument as a kind of evolutionary echo of a voice.
Hmm. Gentlemen, we've run out of time, as they say in radio. Dan Levitin is author of the book, This Is Your Brain on Music, The Science of a Human Obsession. Jim DeRogatis is co-host of Sound Opinions and a music blogger for WBZ in Chicago. And if you want to hear more of Jim and I, I'm going to be on Sound Opinions tonight. And
yeah, we had a great time, didn't we?
Yeah, we will. So you can check it out tonight on soundopinions.org. And you can also listen to our playlist of spooky songs on our website at sciencefriday.com/spookymusic. Thank you both, and happy Halloween.
This podcast is brought to you by Harry's. They're an innovative company that's disrupting an industry we've all had to pay into and endure for years. Let's talk about razors. For years, guys have had a poor experience shopping and paying for overpriced razors. Harry's focuses on giving guys a great shaving experience for a fraction of the price, half the price of other razor blades. They have high-quality blades engineered in their own factory in Germany for sharpness and strength. Plus the convenience and ease of ordering online so you can skip the razor aisle. Each kit includes a razor handle, 3 blades, and your choice of foaming shave gel or shave cream. Go to Harry's.com today and get $5 off your first order with a coupon code SCIENCEFRIDAY. That's Harry's.com, promo code SCIENCEFRIDAY.